Welcome to the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you, also Steve Vaughn on this edition. And in studio, Masaki, one of our interns, is with us.
So a live studio audience.
We have a live studio audience. It's sort of
an
odd,
audience of one. Yep.
Yes, exactly. Just, you know, keep the clapping to a minimum, please. Okay. You know, here's the top story from CNN last night. Very interesting. CNN was telling the truth. Of course, it was such a shock, I almost had a heart attack. CNN is telling the truth.
Wow.
That's CNN, that's crazy. Business. It was CNN Business, so maybe that's part of
okay.
it. Sometimes the business guys get it right. But it was effectively how to run your business into the ground 101. Bed Bath & Beyond made plenty of mistakes that led to this week's bankruptcy filing. And I think everybody knows at this point, we cover this story on the Tuesday edition of theworldview.com. But among the most consequential was $11.8 billion that Bed Bath & Beyond spent since 2004 to buy back its own shares. The company's repurchase program wasn't unique, but for a cash-starved business that announced it would likely be forced to close all of its stores, it couldn't find an 11th-hour savior to buy it. The money could have been better spent. Instead, it fueled a desperate and ultimately failed effort to support its stock price. The $11.8 billion Bed Bath & Beyond organization spent on its stock since 2004 comes to more than twice the $5.2 billion in debt it had on its books. In its most recent SEC filing, a debt load that proved crushing for the company, it left the company unable to buy the inventory required to create the sales it needed to reverse the losses. Bed Bath & Beyond grew particularly active share repurchases in July of 2014, taking on $2 billion in debt to finance share buybacks as it started to face pressure from activist shareholders to improve the stock's performance. Okay, so the whole idea of buying back your own stock is to, I guess, improve the price or the apparent value of the company. The company isn't doing anything. It's just buying its own stock and making it appear that there's some value to the stock. Across corporate America, share repurchases reached a record $936 billion in 2022, up from $882 billion in 2021. Share repurchases are forecast to top $1 trillion this year. So, you know, there's quite a few organizations, quite a few businesses doing this. It's up from $400 billion in 2010, up from $10 billion in 1990. It's a 100-fold increase in stock buybacks since 1990. So, again, these are attempts to prop up the apparent value of a company by stock buybacks. Sometimes companies will borrow money to buy their own stock. It's crazy, the kind of thing that goes on these days, Steve. And again, you know, they were doing it to a tune of $10 billion in 1990. Now you're up to $1 trillion of this stuff. What is that? 100-fold increase in stock buybacks since 1990. This is another indication of, you know, the house of cards coming down. Don't anybody open the door. If you do, the house of cards, that huff of wind is going to just, you know, blow this whole thing down. And that's what's happening right now, Steve. I mean, I think we're more vulnerable to a puff of wind than we ever have been in the history of the American economy.
Yeah, I don't get the whole stock buyback issue anyway. Are people going to look at it and say, oh, wow, Bed Bath & Beyond, they're doing great. Let's buy them. And it's like, well, who's buying all the stock up? Oh, they are.
They are. Exactly. It almost seems laughable. I mean, you would think that a 10-year-old would see the joke in all of this. Companies have engaged in stock buybacks this year as a last-ditch effort to prop up their company values. Chevron, Salesforce, UPS, Discover Financial Services, and Agilent Technologies. Big stock buybacks for 2022 included Apple at $90 billion. Morgan Stanley and Walmart are doing $20 billion each. Also, Nike, Cisco, Home Depot, Visa, ExxonMobil, and Salesforce are the big stock buybacks this year in 2023. Okay, you're looking at Morgan Stanley, Walmart, Nike, Cisco, Home Depot, Visa, ExxonMobil, and Salesforce. These are the companies faking their valuation right now. Now, let's go back to 2021. This excerpt I take from How the World Runs and your part in it. This is basic macroeconomics and microeconomics for 14-year-olds to explain to a 14-year-old what happens with stock buybacks, quantitative easing, and everything else. I think a 14-year-old can understand this stuff. So we bring some of this out for 14-year-olds in the basic economics text that we give for a ninth grader. in our Generations curriculum. And this particular series has been extremely popular, not just for ninth graders, but for 40-year-olds and 47-year-olds and 52-year-olds and I guess a couple 74-year-olds. So this book, How the World Runs and Your Part in It, is an easy explanation of what's going on in economies, in America especially, but around the world as well. So this excerpt found in How the World Runs: Apple Computer made the most aggressive use of stock buybacks in the early 2020s, putting $85.85 billion in purchasing their own stock shares in 2021. And as I just mentioned, in 2022, they did another $90 billion. So they're just doing it as much as they possibly can. Part, this was contributed a explosion of the company's stock value from $38 in 2019 to $182 by the end of 2021, an almost four-fold increase. But the company's sales increased only 40%. Okay, so their value increased 400%. So all the lemmings ran out and bought as much Apple stock as they could and increased the stock value by 400%, while the company's sales increased only 40%, from $260 billion to $366 billion over the same time frame. Plainly, the fourfold increase in stock value is unreasonable, largely stimulated by fake buybacks. That's how Apple Computer became the highest valued company in the world, capitalized at $3 trillion by the year 2022. So go back to 2016, Apple stock was $23. Okay, so if you were buying Apple stock in 2016, you were paying $23 for it. Apple stock today is $164. That's a 700% increase on your money in 7 years.
Wow.
Okay, that's totally ridiculous.
Yeah.
Can somebody say that's totally ridiculous?
That's totally ridiculous.
A 700% increase on your money on the valuation of a stock in 7 years, where the sales for Apple has, you know, crept up 40, 50, 60%, but they got a 700% increase in the valuation of the stock. It's not worth that much. It's a hyperinflated faux value. It's a lie. There's nothing but sheer greed and utter foolishness running the NASDAQ and the tech stocks right now. Insanity has kicked into the American markets big time since 2016. We're just talking the last 7 years. The last 7 years, it's total insanity. Unrestrained, unmitigated, insane, irrational greed is running the markets today, period. For the last 16 months, there have been four dead cat bounces on the NASDAQ and Apple stock valuation, okay? The system won't allow for a correction. When I say a dead cat bounce, what I mean is, as of about 16 months ago, there was an attempt for the market to correct, but they're not going to let it correct. Why not? Because there's all this fake investment going on. There's people throwing in stock buybacks at $90 billion a shot. So the companies, the system isn't allowing for a correction, a natural correction, which would be provided by a free market. But there is no free market. There's no sane, rational approach to investment left in the American market anymore. For the last 16 months, there's been these four dead cat bounces, which means it comes down, then it bounces back up, comes down, bounces right back up again, comes down, bounces right back up again. The power brokers aren't going to allow for a correction. Why? Because they're afraid of it. They don't want it. Nobody wants Humpty Dumpty falling down off that wall. The only thing holding this house together is the termites holding hands. Don't let go. Don't let go. Guys, termites better hold hands, because this whole house is coming down. Be back with more in just a moment on the Generations broadcast.
What happens when a culture that was established and guided by biblical principles abandons the faith and seeks to live by its own wisdom? In his latest groundbreaking work, Epic: The Rise and Fall of the West, Kevin Swanson unfolds the dramatic history of Western civilization, highlighting the phenomenal impact that Jesus Christ and his people have had upon the thought, culture, and institutions of the Christian West, as well as tracing the slow but devastating decline of Western civilization and the key factors that have led to our spectacular fall over the centuries. A sobering narrative of gospel hope, this book urges its reader to greater fervency in the work of discipleship and the development of an international vision for the church. This is truly a must-read for any Christian seeking to understand the times and seasons in which we live. You can claim your hardcover copy of Epic: The Rise and Fall of the West by visiting generations.org/store today. That's generations.org/store.
And And we're back on Generations. This is Kevin Swanson. The Piper is in, Steve. The Piper is in. Time to pay the Piper.
Yeah.
The Piper is in. What's all this paper in my inbox? This is the Piper. These are the invoices from the Piper. I'm emptying my inbox right now. Man, I must have 400 invoices here. I think the Piper has invoiced me.
Maybe we can ignore them.
Maybe, yeah, let's just burn them. Maybe that'll help. We'll burn them.
Where are my kids now?
Put them in the stove. The Piper's invoiced, my friends.
Yeah.
We're just not going to be able to go much further down this track, Steve. I think that's obvious. There's going to be corrections. I mean, there just has to be. People say, well, yeah, you can just keep borrowing money till there's nothing that money can buy. And the gods of the copybook heading say, if you don't work, you die. So, you know, we can get back to that if we want to. Here, let's look at what the government is doing. Because the government is setting an example for the population. And maybe there's a symbiosis. You know, the population sets an example for the government. Government sets an example for the population. I don't know which one comes first, but I think they both work off each other. Total public and private debt in the U.S. has gone from $30 trillion to $93 trillion since 2000, since the turn of the millennium. All right, so we've gone total U.S. Public and private debt's gone from $30 trillion to $93 trillion. I think that makes up something like 30 to 40% of the world debt, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
The world debt's been hovering up around $400 trillion or something like that. I'm not sure. But I think we're upwards of, 35 to 40% of the world debt is right here in the United States, and we make up, 4% of the world's population. So we're the biggest debtors, and we're also the biggest domino. So if our domino goes down, what happens to the other dominoes?
Well, they'll get smashed and then knock into the next ones, and the whole thing crumbles down.
And Japan goes down, China goes down, the whole thing goes down. But nothing that a world war can't solve.
Oh, yeah. World war is all going to get you out of debt.
Compensate for. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so we're looking at a deficit this year of the last 6 months. Get this. Last 6 months, we're at $1.1 trillion for the year.
Goodness
now,
gracious.
If you recall, in 2016, 17, 18, 19, it's only a few years ago, right? 2016, 2017, 2022, and 2019, you're running between, 500 to 700 billion. Well, so far this year, we're 1 trillion into it. We're 1 trillion into this year. Probably rounding up to 1.8 trillion for the year, for the fiscal year. And the CBO is saying we're looking at 1.85 trillion for next year. So we're not coming out of this thing. It's just, we're stuck, man. We are stuck with massive deficits. Now, no recovery from the COVID years. The deficit per GDP average for Biden is now at 7.9%. That's based on these numbers. In other words, you take the average deficit for his 4 years, divide it by the average GDP, you're looking at 7.9%. That's outrageous. And you thought Trump had it. Trump was the one that set the record. Well, he did. Yeah, he set the record. He set the all-time record for the most deficit spending of any president in the history of this nation. At 7.4%. So yeah, go Trump. Trump was the biggest spender and by far the biggest deficit spender in American history. 7.4%. Well, President Biden's running 7.9%. So
yeah, not to be outdone. Yeah.
Not to be outdone. Yeah. There's no way that we can apparently come back to it. We don't have the principle. We don't have the character. We don't have the money. We can't cut the budgets. Republicans can't cut budgets. Democrats can't cut budgets. There's no character. There's no economic know-how. There's nothing left for the nation to be able to compensate anymore or correct the downfall, the economic downfall of the republic. It's impossible. By the way, average deficit per GDP under Nixon, 1.1%. Average deficit per GDP under Ford, 3.6%. A Republican, by the way. Average under a Democrat, Jimmy Carter, 2.3%. Much better than a Democrat. President Ronald Reagan put it back up to 4.1% average deficit per year per GDP. President George Bush Sr., again, Republican, 4.1%. President Bill Clinton, a Democrat, brought it down to 1.6%. So Democrats tend to do better than Republicans when it comes to government spending and deficit spending. President George W. Bush took it back up to 3.3%. President Barack Obama took it up to 4.9%. President Donald Trump put it at 7.4%. President Biden takes it to 7.9%. What does that tell you over the last 20 years? Up, 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 up. And it's not being corrected. The average deficit per GDP per year per president is now at 7.9%, up from 1% under Nixon up from roughly 1.6% under Bill Clinton, up from 4.9% under Barack Obama, now at 7.9% under Barack Obama. Well, you say, yeah, but the interest on the debts, no big deal. We can pay for, well, I'm sorry, the interest rates were pushed down to zero, encouraging more debt, public and private. So we got addicted to debt with the interest rates down. Then to compensate for inflation, they've had to raise the interest rates back up. And nobody really wants to, you know, receive 1.7% on your bond when your inflation rate's running at 6%. I mean, nobody really likes that kind of investment. You know, why would that be, Steve?
Yeah.
Why would it be that you're not satisfied with a 1.7% on your government bond when you're running 6% inflation rate, right? There you're losing 4% on your overall
purchasing
value.
Power. Yeah.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. So anyway, since the year 2000, the U.S. public debt soared from $5.7 trillion to $31 trillion. So that's what happened under George W. That's what happened under Barack Obama. That's what's happened under Trump and Biden. All right. We've got an increase from $5.7 trillion to $31 trillion. At the same time, interest expense grew by barely 80%. So you got a 450% gain on the public debt, while the interest expense only grew 80% over the same 22-year period. Does that make sense?
So a little bit,
overall debt burden has gone up by 450%. Your overall interest expense on the debt only increased by barely 80%. Why? Because the Federal Reserve was taking the interest rates down, 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 down to almost 0%, and we weren't really getting much on our bonds. Somehow they were able to keep inflation down fairly low, or at least they appeared to be so, and the debt service was rather low. Well, now debt service is upwards of 3%, 4%, 5% on federal bonds, and this doesn't even keep up with inflation, so who wants to own these lousy government bonds? The CBO's latest federal spending projections tell everything you need to know. Even with its relatively moderate forecasted rise in Treasury debt yields, outlays for interest expense are projected to rise by 200% over the next 10 years. That's triple the projected growth of health, Social Security entitlements, seven times the baseline gain in defense and non-defense discretionary appropriations. And of course, that's just a moderate guess. It could be higher than that. It could be 300 to 400% to beat inflation if they're going to have to beat inflation. When governments can't afford to service their own debts anymore, what happens next? Well, people aren't buying government bonds anymore. Governments default on their loans. Faith in government implodes and chaos ensues. Blood on the streets. Okay, so that's the way this thing goes. Also in economic news, one more thing. Inflation is killing American savings. George Washington University's Global Finance Literacy Excellence Center's Personal Finance Index. Boy, they could have made that shorter. I mean, come on. Well, you got 9 words to describe your organization and what you do. Well, they found that a quarter of Americans have cut their retirement savings. 12% totally quit saving last year. Now, 30% are finding it tough to make ends meet, up from 24% in 2021. 39% of Americans don't have enough savings to cover a month, up from 32% in 2021. So Americans are going bankrupt is what's happening. And, you know, if there's any jiggle whatsoever in employment numbers, just get out of the way. That's all I'm telling you. Just get out of the way. Well, let me end with this, Steve. I've got a fair amount of investments. We got an entire chapter on investments in this book, How the World Runs, and you're part in it, a book about the practical things of life and economy for everybody, what the Bible says about successful businesses, work life, home economies, investments, national economies. Okay, it's a very simple, straightforward book written for 14-year-olds, but it's good for everybody. It's called How the World Runs, and you're part in it. Here's some advice just to leave you concerning this subject of investment. So let me just kind of run through this briefly, kind of give you a biblical perspective on this. Always be aware that the best place to invest your money is your own business above and beyond anybody else. You will do the best possible job to make sure your business is successful. Generally, caretakers or hired stewards won't take the best care of other people's investments. The owner is more likely to look after his flocks and to know the state of his herds than a hired hand. Running a small business is a great way to invest your money. While you may work a job, you can always keep a part-time business going on the side. For example, you may want to take your savings of $5,000 and purchase 100 electronic devices to sell on eBay. If you sell each device for $75, including postage, you would make 50% on the investment. That's a pretty good return on your investment compared to what you would get if you put the money in a bank. A project like this would still require a little work on your part if you have to package the devices for shipment, for example. But what is your very best investment? Well, lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. Earthly treasures are subject to decay or theft. Before getting the rest of the investments available to us in the world, the words of Jesus should direct us towards the very best investment of all. What are these treasures? Jesus clarifies this for us in Matthew 19:27-29. He points out that a heavenly investment is anything given up for the sake of Christ. Everyone who has left houses or brothers or sisters or father or mother or wife or children or lands for my sake shall receive 100-fold and inherit eternal life. Heavenly treasures have much to do with visiting the poor in their affliction. It's an investment of time, money, and energy into the least of these who follow Jesus. Also, Proverbs 19:17 promises that he who has pity on the poor lends to the Lord, and he will pay back what he has given. Paul enjoins the rich in 1 Timothy 6 to be generous with the poor. By doing this, they will be storing up for themselves a good foundation for the time to come, that they may lay hold on eternal life. This is a major concern of Christ as he speaks to the sheep and the goats on the final day of judgment. The king will say to those on his right hand, "Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, you gave me food. I was thirsty, you gave me drink. I was a stranger, you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, you came to me." Then the righteous will answer him, saying, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you?" And the king will answer and say to them, "Assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it unto me." All right, well, that wraps up this segment of the program. Much more to say in that chapter on investments from a biblical perspective. Again, you'll find this advice and how the world runs and your part in it, complete with the 400 to 500 Bible verses and Bible passages that tie directly into money. So much concerning money in both the Old and New Testaments, so much concerning money in the teachings of Jesus. And I try to bring it all together in my book, How the World Runs and Your Part in, available at generations.org. This is Kevin Swanson and Steve Vaughn inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.